Welcome to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. Novels have always provided a rich source of story material for Hollywood, even back to the days of silent film. And this year alone, more than a dozen films with Academy Award nominations are based on novels or short stories, including Atonement, No Country for Old Men, The Kite Runner, and 310 to Yuma. Have you seen these movies, or have you read the original source material for them? How do the movie versions stack up? What must a movie do to remain faithful to the novel, to be a successful adaptation? What are the challenges of going from the page to the screen? We're talking about books to movies this hour with three guests. Tom Byers is professor of English and director of the Commonwealth Center for the Humanities and Society at the University of Louisville. Tom, it's good to see you again. Hello.
You too, Julie.
Also joining us, John Reisner. He teaches screenwriting at the University of Louisville Delphi Center and is the founder of ScreenwriterInc.com. Hello to you, John.
Good morning.
Kevin Sullivan is a longtime bookseller working now for Borders Books and Music and a longtime film buff also, having worked previously for Wild and Woolly Video and, as we talked about, the dear departed Old Vogue Theater in St. Matthews. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning.
The Vogue Theater still being mourned, I know, by many
Louisvillians. Yes.
The number to join our conversation is 814-TALK. That's 814-8255 or toll-free 877-814-TALK. You can also send a question or comment by email to soa@wfpl.org. We're going to be looking for your picks. You know, do you tend to read the book before you see the movie? Have you seen any of the Oscar contenders this year that are based on books? What do you think? How do they stack up? 814-TALK is the number to call. So let's talk about first that source material in terms of what elements or qualities of a book do you think make it a good candidate for screen adaptation, regardless of what the filmmakers ultimately do with it, that make it a good candidate, and also the elements that make it, you think, unfilmable. I'm not sure which way is easier for you to approach this. So, Tom, start us out.
Well, Hollywood movies are basically a narrative art, and books with strong plot and books that rely a lot on narrative drive really, I think, do the best. Conversely, the hardest books to film are the ones that rely most on complicated language, on prose style, and they're the ones that people most often screw up, I think.
You think? And John, what about you?
I agree. If you have a novel that you can have a novel that not necessarily has a great storyline, but the way the author writes is very, very vivid and enjoyable for the reader. It could be a successful novel, but trying to transfer that over to a film, the fact that it doesn't have a strong storyline or a strong character, it creates a lot of problems for it, which would entail that it could not be a great movie.
Yeah. I mean, books can be so internal, Tom.
I'll add one other thing. Books that take place in other worlds often can be good sources for movies, sci-fi, fantasy, and so forth, because we get to see those worlds, and if they're done well, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's sort of your imagination to film in some ways. Kevin Sullivan, just some overall thoughts on
I agree that that if something's more internal, that it doesn't really, it's harder to translate that to the film screen and everything. But also things that are really dialogue-driven, like The Maltese Falcon, they took that screenplay basically almost word for word from the book, and that's why it worked so well. When there were two other translations, it didn't really work as well.
Mm-hmm. Of course, something like The Big Sleep left me utterly confused.
It left the filmmakers confused.
Okay, that's as far as the book is concerned, but what do you think, then, a movie adaptation of a book must do to be successful? You know, some people would say, well, it has to be exactly like the book or as close to the book as possible, but is that always true, necessarily, John?
Actually, a screenplay cannot be like a novel. A novel, you're usually seeing the world through the character's eyes, what they think, how they feel, their emotions. It's all taking place within the character. In a screenplay, it's visual. You cannot have the internal monologue that's going on inside the character's head like you do in a novel. Plus, a novel can be 300-400 pages long or longer. A screenplay on average is only 120 pages, you know, a two-hour movie. Each minute, each page is equal to 1 minute on film.
Wow.
So you have to cut down a lot and able to get it within that time frame. So sometimes you have to take out, you have to just go with the main storyline, the main character, follow them instead of all the other secondary characters that are happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kevin?
There have been a couple of really good adaptations that moved away from the source material. L.A. Confidential is mm-hmm. such a labyrinth of a book that apparently James Ellroy and his agent were laughing when they sold the rights to it because they just thought it was unfilmable. And they stripped it down to make a great movie out of the essence of the book. And The Firm, actually, the movie The Firm, based on the Grisham novel, changed like the last third of the story and really worked as a movie, better than I think the story in the book would have worked.
Do you guys typically, do you read the book first before you see the movie, or does it happen the other way around, Tom?
My reading is so much driven by my job that I may or may not ever read the book that a movie is based on. I really track those things most by what I hear is a good movie, what I hear is worth seeing. And then in some cases, I do both, but rarely, or more less often than you'd think.
Now, you'd sent some notes to us with your picks before the show, and you said that often I like the movies better if I don't know the sources.
Yeah, I think sometimes that the novel can create a kind of noise on the system. You're wanting the movie to measure up to the novel or even to look the way you imagined the novel. Mm-hmm. And very often that doesn't work. Often it's best just to go to the movie and think of it as a movie.
Kevin, as the bookseller, do you read the book first, generally, before you'll get to the movie?
It depends. There's different authors that I like. And
do you prefer doing one over the other?
I would say that I prefer reading the books first. And generally, I'll read the books a couple of years ahead of the movie, so they tend to, you know, not be as solid in my mind mm-hmm. when the movie finally gets around. But I'm reading No Country for Old Men right now. I'm almost done with it. And it's very close to the book, and I'm enjoying it. Or it's very close to the movie, and I'm enjoying it a whole lot still.
You know, so there, and that works the other way, too. If you see the movie first, and John Reisner, is that typically what you will do?
That's what I do. I like to see the movie first, and then use, if I enjoy that, then I read the book, because the book has more, you know, can add more to the experience. Otherwise, I'm going to be disappointed.
See, some people are just so determined, because they think, well, once I see the movie, you know, I can't read this without seeing Brad Pitt or whoever played, you know, yeah. And they don't really want that. They want sort of a clean slate going into a book, but it's sort of unavoidable, isn't it? Once you've seen a movie, unless it's been years and years, you kind of lock into how the movie represented the characters and who they played.
Instead of creating your own visuals in your head, you're seeing the movie visuals. That can happen.
Sometimes that works fine, though. I thought with Brokeback Mountain, for instance, I don't know if I would have gotten around to the story, which I read after I saw the movie, but I don't really care about seeing anything in my head differently from the way the movie worked. I thought that was a terrific adaptation, actually. So sometimes it's fine.
Well, a book like To Kill a Mockingbird, I have no problem with Gregory Peck as Atticus. So when I read that book again, that's a perfectly, I thought that was such an excellent adaptation of the
book.
That's
a great movie.
And terrific casting.
Yes, right. Absolutely. So I like to conjure those images, actually. I read the book in black and white, even, you know, taken from the film. But let's get to it. Before we get to our first break, well, hopefully some callers will join us with their picks of best and worst adaptations of books. Movie adaptations of books. Let's hear a couple of your selections. John Reisner, first of all, films that you think did very well in terms of being an adaptation of a book or short story.
I think the new version of Casino Royale did a good job of taking the flavor of the original Ian Fleming novel. They took the basic plot and expanded upon it and made it very cinematic. I think they did a good job with that. I'm a huge James Bond fan, so I had to go see that one, and I've read all the books and seen all the movies.
So you're proprietary about that material, and
yes,
you,
I am.
You feel
yes.
The credit
is due. I'm a little iffy on Daniel Craig as Bond, but yeah, he did a pretty good job. So.
Tom, just one of your best.
I was really surprised at how well they did with Lord of the Rings. Those were books I grew up with and loved, and I really didn't think they were going to be able to give me a similar experience. Fellowship of the Ring may be the movie that I've ever seen that looked the most like I had imagined the book, and that was a pleasure. But I just think they did a terrific job with that.
There's been calls now for, well, is he doing the prequel? Is he doing The Hobbit? Is that
the last I heard?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. It's not as good a book though.
Kevin Sullivan, just what you think has been a great film adaptation of a book?
Or? Well, it's probably obvious, but The Godfather is just an amazing movie of that book, and the things that it edits from the book really work to make it less pulpy and make it the classic that it is, really.
I mean, that is a near-perfect movie, isn't it?
It is.
Possibly perfect, but, you know, is anything perfect? I don't know.
But it is
a near-perfect movie that I'm compelled to watch whenever I see it come on. Whatever point in the movie, if I've got time, I'll sit there and watch a good bit of it. Tom, you mentioned this in one of your picks as an example of...
Right. This is a classic example of how great movies can be made from mediocre or at least sub-literary books. And very often it works that way. To Have and Have Not is a terrific movie that was made from what the director said was Hemingway's worst novel. And sometimes that's a better source.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned also along that genre, I think Rebecca also, which was a great throwback choice.
Yes,
Rebecca.
Yes.
Now, and Casablanca.
Yes. Well, of course, Casablanca was made from a Broadway musical that didn't do much
business.
No kidding.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Hmm. Everybody comes to Rick's, or everybody goes
to
Rick's.
A musical?
Yeah.
Interesting. John Reisner, anything along that ilk of, you know, not great books, but much better movies, you think?
Hmm.
Is Jaws in there, or was that a pretty good book? I have not read it, I have to be honest.
Jaws was a pretty good book. And it caught on with the public, and that's the reason it made such a bestseller. But the movie is a classic example of doing everything right as far as the story, the direction, everything worked on all cylinders with that kind of movie.
Absolutely. Tom, go ahead. Yes.
One footnote to Have and Have Not's the only movie I know of where two Nobel Prize winners were responsible in large part for the, because it's Hemingway's novel, and then William Faulkner worked on the screenplay.
Well, it has good pedigree then, doesn't
yes.
it, to begin with. All right, how about, before we go to break, a couple of the worst, Kevin Sullivan, big disappointments.
Bonfire of the Vanities is pretty much another obvious choice. That just disintegrated on screen, and it's a great book. But
was that just a bad movie? If the book had never been written, was the movie itself bad also? I didn't see it.
Yeah, it didn't work at all.
It's terrible.
It's so much more fun to pick at these. Tom, some of the worst.
Well, one that I think surprisingly misses, and there's a lot of good in the movie, but an unfilmable book to me is Toni Morrison's Beloved. And the reason is that the character of Beloved is very complicated in the book. Sometimes she's a baby, sometimes she's a teenager, sometimes she's very large. She's a real shapeshifter, and they had no solution for that on the film, and she comes across simply as a mentally deficient teenager, and you lose all the power of that spirit figure, mm-hmm. I think. Oprah and Danny Glover are both very good in the movie, but it just doesn't work.
And that's sad, too, when you see some really great acting and it's all for naught.
Yeah.
John Reisner, before we go to break, some of the worst, you think, worst adaptations?
Okay, one of my, one of the biggest stinkers is a book by Lawrence Block. It's one of his comic mysteries. It's Burglar in the Closet. It was made into a film with Whoopi Goldberg. And it's set, the novel's about, it's a man named Bernie Rodenbaugh. It's set in New York City. And New York City's sort of like a character. I mean, he talks about, you know, all the different things about New York. Well, they decided they're going to have Whoopi Goldberg as Bernie. They changed the sex, and they also move it to L.A. They just totally changed the whole storyline, and it makes you wonder why they even bought that, you know, that story to make into a film. It was really bad.
So Burglar in the Closet, save your money.
Exactly.
All right. Real quick, Tom.
Great Gatsby, we should mention as a bad one. And I am told that the Demi Moore Scarlet Letter is awful, though I skipped seeing it.
Those are perhaps worth revisiting when we come back from break as spectacular failures in popular opinion, let's say. Let's take our quick break. What movies do you think have been most successful adaptations of novels, short stories, or nonfiction? What have been the biggest disappointments? 814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 877-814-TALK, or send an email to soa@wfpl.org. You're listening to State of Affairs on WFPL.
For more information about this topic, as well as information about publications mentioned on State of Affairs, or to email us regarding any recent shows, just click on State of Affairs when you visit our website, wfpl.org.
Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. We're talking this hour about turning books into movies. Which movies do you think have been the most successful or least successful adaptation of a book? Do you tend to read the book before you'll see the movie, or will seeing the movie make you want to read the book? 814-TALK, 814-8255, toll-free 877-814-TALK. Our guests are Tom Byers, professor of English at the University of Louisville, John Reisner, teaches screenwriting at the U of L Delphi Center, Kevin Sullivan, a bookseller with Borders Books and Music and a longtime film buff. We go to your calls, 814-TALK, 814-8255. Go to your calls in just a moment. We have to go back to The Great Gatsby, Tom. You mentioned that as one of the worst film adaptations of all time before we went to break, but it needs more than a quick mention.
Okay, well, just a couple of things about it. First of all, Robert Redford was very badly miscast. Redford is a guy who is extremely attractive, and women are attracted to him, but he doesn't project a lot of drive or intensity, and Gatsby is a man who is driven his whole life by an inner passion. Mm-hmm. I think part of the problem, too, is that this is a great American story, and it was directed by a British guy, Jack Clayton, and I just think he didn't quite get the resonances of the myth. Now, he had made a terrific adaptation of Henry James's Turn of the Screw called The Innocents, very scary movie done, but I think he was the wrong pick for Gatsby.
You know, the sole thing I liked about Gatsby, though, was watching the costumes, the scenery, the sort of again, taking it from my head and putting it on the screen, what I imagined his house to look like, or the huge parties he would throw. So
everything
it was luxurious to watch, but it was so without the soul.
Yeah, everything but Daisy's hair. I thought they made Mia Farrow look bad, which it isn't easy.
Yes. John Reisner, you wanted to talk about Fitzgerald generally.
Yes. F. Scott Fitzgerald is a good example of where a novelist tried to become a screenwriter. In 1937, he went to Hollywood to try. He was kind of failing as a writer. He was having a writer's block. He went to Hollywood to become a screenwriter, and he spent 2.5 years there. And he only ended up with one screen credit, and that was for adapting someone else's novel. He approached every screenplay like a novel. He did fast research, did huge amounts of character background writing and things like that, but he just could not figure out what made a good screenplay. I mean, he went overboard.
It's a different art, isn't it?
Yeah, Billy Wilder said it was like hiring a great sculptor and hiring to be a plumber. He just couldn't get the pipes to fit. You know, he was an artist, but he couldn't get them to fit. And he ended up, as a failure.
Is his work filmable, do you think? Have there been, there was a film of Tender as the Night, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the film. I've read the book, but I haven't seen the film.
I haven't really seen any adaptions that were really that great.
The one of the ones I've seen that comes closest to working is of The Last Tycoon, which I think is a kind of underrated movie. It's hard to film Fitzgerald, partly because it is partly the prose, but I would like to think that somebody could still nail The Great Gatsby sometime.
Yes, try it again. Kevin Sullivan, before we go to calls, any comment on The Great Gatsby? Or also, Tom, you mentioned The Scarlet Letter, either of these classics.
Not really so much on The Great Gatsby, but Tom mentioned The Innocents, which is a great adaptation of Henry James' novella, I guess. And that worked really well. That's one of my favorite adaptations, I'd have to say.
All right, let's go to the phones and hear what our callers have to say. Jill, thanks for waiting, and go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say I hated Mia Farrow in that movie, The Great Gatsby. She was absolutely terrible. But I was calling because I read The Kite Runner before I actually saw the movie, and it was a great adaptation, I think. And I think that it fit the book perfectly. But it is, like the whoever was saying, hard to have everything go just like the novel, because a lot of the main character struggles you're not able to see.
Mm-hmm.
But another movie I thought, and this is like a resentment for 15 years I've had, when I saw Jurassic Park, I decided to read all three of the novels, and that movie was absolutely terrible. It made the movie, all three movies, terrible once you actually read the book, because you realize how extremely intelligent the author was and the books were, and then the movies turned really sour. I don't know. Mm. I think that they could have done a better job.
So you're better off just seeing the movies before you read the book. Before you read
the
books.
Yeah, it's almost like if you read the book afterwards, sometimes it ruins it.
Yeah. Okay. Jill, thanks very much. The Kite Runner, released just late last year. Anybody see that one? Not among this panel, but Jill thought it was a good adaptation. Let's go next to Greg in E-Town. Hello, Greg.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm calling because a book that I picked up that I would have never picked up if I hadn't seen the movie was the Forrest Gump-based novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what the guest would thought about the adaptation of that novel, specifically its effect on pop culture. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Well, I really disliked the movie. I'm one of the few people, I guess, and it started for me with Tom Hanks's accent, which, having grown up in Alabama, I found completely unconvincing. So I'm sort of the wrong one to ask. But I am told there's an interesting change, that in the book, Forrest's mama always told him that he was like a box of chocolate. You never knew what you were going to get. And in the movie, of course, it's life is like a box of chocolate, which to me is much more cliched.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it was a very successful movie.
Very much so. Greg, thanks very much. Any comments on Forrest Gump?
Well, I like the movie okay. It touches a lot more on pop culture things than the book does. And the book's a lot broader. He even goes to outer space with the astronauts in the book. but I thought that it was a pretty good adaptation of they brought it down a little bit, and that worked better for the movie.
Greg, thank you. I want to go back to, just quickly, I meant to mention this after the Jurassic Park call. Good or bad when the author kind of gets involved in the mix of the adaptation? Can that have mixed results, do you think?
It can be a problem for the screenwriter. Depending on how much involvement the novelist or the producer has, what they let them cut out and what they let them keep in and things of that nature. If they have a lot of control over it, it makes it very difficult to be able to streamline the story and make it more cinematic.
Because everything's precious to the author.
Exactly.
Do we know, did Michael Crichton, was he involved at all in the writing?
So many writers report that they had a bad experience with the film adaptation.
So they just turn it over and say,
I think they're,
give me my check. And
I think they're often smarter if they do,
The movie Sahara is a perfect example where the author sued the producers, and he totally went online to all of his fans and said, don't go to see the movie. And, you know, and then he got mad that the movie didn't make, you know, more money. You know, so
it must be inhibiting for a screenwriter. I guess in some ways maybe they need to have the freedom to know they don't have to be word for word or faithful mm-hmm. to the book to try to capture the spirit of it somehow in some other way.
It's more that the screenwriter wants to, he's not doing an exact copy mm-hmm. of the book. He's more trying to do, the film is more of a metaphor for the novel. He's trying to get the flavor of it and the feeling of the novel and not exactly word for word, you know, everything that was in the novel, mm-hmm. especially it's a huge novel.
Let's go back to the phones again. We're looking for your opinions here, your picks for best movie adaptation of a book and worst movie adaptation of a book. What has worked for you? What has been a big disappointment to you? 814-TALK, 814-8255. And Shauna, you're next on State of Affairs. Hello.
Hi there. I'm calling because a very often forgotten book adaptation and unlikely matchup is Scorsese with The Age of Innocence, Edith Wharton's novel, which I think is an absolutely perfect adaptation. And I think he did it because it was his father's favorite book. But that may be just hearsay. And then I also wanted you to maybe discuss how Cormac McCarthy's All the Pretty Horses kind of got destroyed in the cutting process, as it started out being a great adaptation, but probably was not cut very well and therefore kind of failed in the, at the box office.
Okay.
I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, Shauna, thanks very much. First Age of Innocence, Martin Scorsese.
Evidently, Scorsese said at one point that he had to make that movie as an anthropologist because he was so far from the world of it, not only in time, but I think in social class and background. And I think there's some wonderful things in it. There's a long tracking shot of a dinner table that is really beautiful, but also tells you a great deal about the world of that movie. He would not have been a logical pick to make a movie about the WASP upper class of New York in that time, but he did better than one might have suspected. I think he's an amazing filmmaker.
Any other comments on that one, or on, she mentioned Cormac McCarthy, All the Pretty Horses?
That's one I didn't see, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it either. I've read the book and I liked it quite a bit, and I love the book actually, and. I kind of didn't go to see it because the producers cut it from like 4 hours to 2 hours, and it just kind of was disheartening because I thought it should be a longer movie just the way the novel plays out.
All right. Back to the phones. A lot of folks waiting to join in. Russ, you're next.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to make a comment and then hang up because I'm actually in a cell phone. I'm
okay.
In a spotlight and talk, but I have to speak quickly. I thought a great adaptation was Mystic River, a book that had a lot of interior thought processes of the characters, and didn't think it would work on screen, but through the power of the actors, you know, it did play Tim Robbins, and I forgot the lead, but anyway, it was a terrific adaptation of a really good book, and yet it was very cinematic and not like a novel. It was not plotting and not wordy. Mm-hmm. It's very cinematic. And that's my comment, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank
okay.
you.
Mystic River. I never did see that.
It's a good movie. It's it was adapted by Brian Helgeland, and of course directed by Clint Eastwood. I think they did a very good job of taking, as I said, the theme and the flavor of the novel and streamlining it for a cinematic experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood's a really, really great filmmaker, I think. One of our best Hollywood filmmakers now. And he's always got that streamlining ability, I think. And he's terrific with actors. That's part of the reason that movie works, I think.
Yeah, I thought that all the performances in that movie were really nuanced and really brought out more than what they were saying. And the ensemble worked really well together.
All right. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute. A few emails have come in, though. Barb, so she agrees with the comments regarding The Firm and The Godfather. She says, I also think Gone with the Wind really followed the book. It was an epic. The current worst series to me is the Jason Bourne trilogy. I really enjoyed the books several times, she says, but the movies come nowhere close to the reality of the books. And these are the Bourne Ultimatum and Robert Ludlum, these three movies. They've been very popular movies. They're very successful.
They make a lot of money, which that's all Hollywood.
But as compared to the book, she thinks they fall short.
This is one of those cases where I'm glad I haven't read the books, because I really liked particularly the first two movies. I think they work quite well on the screen. And it may be that the books are even better, but that's a kind of story that I'm really happy to get in 2 hours in a movie. So
rather than invest more time. Although Barb would disagree. She says the books are great. Kevin Sullivan?
I actually like the third, the Bourne Ultimatum, probably the best of those. And I've read a couple of Ludlum novels, and they're huge, and there's a lot that goes unmade in a two-hour movie from a 600-page book thriller. So I thought the movies worked really well, though.
Now, Barb also mentions Gone with the Wind, which was just on television last night, actually. And they took the time it needs to tell that story. And yet, those who've read the book know that some subplots and characters were left out as well. But it would have been a six-hour movie, I guess.
That's actually one F. Scott Fitzgerald worked on. He worked on it for a week, and he was forbidden to use any words that were not actually in the novel. They said he couldn't use any words that he couldn't find in the book. And he spent a week on it, and he just gave up. They fired him off of it.
There's something so sad to me about the image of Fitzgerald struggling in Hollywood. But that's another program for another time. Let's go back to the phones and welcome Dave to the program. Hello.
Hi, I was thinking of great adaptations, a trilogy, actually, The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, right. Right.
Those books are so dense that they could condense those down into movies. There might be a case where actually seeing the movie would help you when you went to read the book, at least the first one especially, because Tolkien does so much of the background material that just really can't transfer, but you don't really lose the essence of the story in the movies.
Yeah, Tom Byers had mentioned that a little bit earlier, too, as one of his favorite movie adaptations.
One of the really smart things they did in that movie was they followed the map. Most of the action in the first book is from west to east, and almost all of the screen action is from left to right, which is how it would be if you were looking at the map. And, of course, the map is in the beginning of the book. And that was something I found that really helped me locate myself in the space of the movie that in a happy way.
Okay.
Dave, no doubt that way.
Dave, thanks very much. Bill emails us. He says, the worst has to be David Lynch's Dune. He even took his name off the final cut. And I want to go to a caller.
It was bad.
Shane, you wanted to talk about Dune also?
Yeah, I wanted to say that Dune was a really good movie, but it was a decent book, and it was just like a really horrible adaptation. Like, the movie has none of the feel that the book has, and I love the movie and I like the book, but that's all I had to say.
So you kind of agree with Bill that it was not all it could have been.
Sounds like that's a case where they're just two different works in a sense. Yeah.
That one's very hard because the characters are always talking to themselves in that, and it's really hard to do. They tried to do it in the movie, and it just didn't work. They did a miniseries on sci-fi a few years back, and I think that worked much better because they had a lot more time to be able to have all the characters and everything go on.
Mm-hmm. All right, and also Bud, let's take care of Bud's email before we go to second break. He says, could you talk about Hunter S. Thompson adaptations? He mentions Fear and Loathing with the film with Johnny Depp that came out a couple of years back. Anybody see that one or have any comparison to make?
Sorry, I missed it.
I'm not a big Hunter fan.
I've seen parts of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
Well, we'll turn to our callers then. If you've read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and you've seen the movie, how do you think the movie stacks up to Hunter S. Thompson's work? Call us at 814-TALK, 814-8255. That does take us to our second break again when we come back. Not just Fear and Loathing, but any other thoughts you have on books to movies? What have been your favorite film adaptations? What do you think have been the most successful and the least successful? Which have been the very worst? 814-TALK, 814-8255, or toll-free 877-814-TALK. You're listening to State of Affairs on WFPL.
State of Affairs is made possible by the University of Louisville, committed to excellence in undergraduate and graduate education. The University of Louisville, Kentucky's Metropolitan Research University. And by the members of Louisville's Public Radio Partnership.
Welcome back to State of Affairs. I'm Julie Credens. Our conversation on books to movies continues now with John Reisner. He teaches screenwriting at the University of Louisville Delphi Center. Tom Byers is professor of English at U of L. Kevin Sullivan, a bookseller and longtime film buff. Waiting to hear what you have to say, your favorite film adaptations from books, and what you think were the biggest disappointments. 814-TALK is the number to call. And let's go to Danny. Danny, you have a comment on Fear and Loathing?
Yes.
Okay.
How's everyone today?
Very well, thanks.
Anyway, I've read the book and also seen the movie. And for Hunter Thompson, I don't think you can translate the craziness of his books and his stories into a movie. And I thought it fell a little short.
All right. Well, there's one reviewer weighing in on Fear and Loathing. Danny, thanks very much for that. Did you have another comment to make?
Yes, just real quick. Mm-hmm. I thought that the Shawshank Redemption was an excellent adaptation from the short story.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. And actually, another caller sounds like has a comment to make about Shawshank Redemption also. Ron, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Yes.
I agreed with the previous caller, and that was going to be my comment, that it seems like Stephen King does not typically translate well to the screen, but every time he pairs up with Frank Darabont, they seem to get his stories translated correctly. With all the internal dialogue that he has with his characters and his books, it never seems to translate right. That, and you had a question before the end of the last break where you asked what's your favorite adaptation.
Yes.
Were. So far, I think I got my favorite two in this past year with the release of No Country for Old Men and The Mist, the Frank Darabont, Stephen King adaptation. They were both pitch-perfect adaptations of stories to film, and it was even, I think in some cases, past the print version. I wondered what your panelists thought, if they had gotten a chance to see either film.
Okay, well, Ron, we appreciate that. Sometimes it is a matter of a great partnership, mm-hmm. isn't it, to bring the best out of both. Before we launch into Stephen King, though, I want to give Chris a chance to join in, because, Chris, you have an opinion on Stephen King as well.
Yes, I do. They've really echoed what I was going to say. I think in the 80s we saw some really bad adaptations with The Running Man and Monkey Shines and Pet Sematary. List goes on and on of a lot of the people, the screenwriters not being, and the directors not being able to capture the horror of Stephen King's writings. But I think in the 90s they kind of, started getting it together and having some better examples with The Green Mile and, Shawshank Redemption, which has been said it. But I've also wanted to bring up Thomas Harris, I believe, wrote Silence of the Lambs. All of those are excellent. Hannibal and Red Dragon, some of the best adaptations from book to film that I've ever seen, almost word for word. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Chris, thanks very much. Quickly back to Stephen King, though, because John Reisner, you definitely had an opinion on that.
Yeah, it seems like, as they said, that a lot of Stephen King novels have been made into films. And I think the ones that work best are the ones that aren't necessarily horror films, like The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption. Those are more character-driven, and they're not going for the scares as the other novels have. King is very good at having very strong main characters and a very strong storyline, and he doesn't get off into a lot of other secondary things. And I think that's why so many of his movies or books have been made into movies.
Mm-hmm. Tom, do you have a comment on that? What about something like The Shining, which some people love and some people really dislike as a movie?
Well, I haven't read the book, but
I think it's pretty terrifying.
I think it's quite a good movie. The Kubrick Shining is really quite good, and that's a case where I think he used some filmmaking tricks to convey a sort of metaphor for what the book was doing.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Sullivan, Stephen King.
I like The Shining quite a bit as well, and I thought that the changes that Kubrick made for the movie, significantly changing the hedge animals that are chasing them around mm-hmm. at the end of the book to the hedge maze in the movie, was something that worked really well. Mm-hmm. Also, I thought Misery was a very good adaptation of a Stephen King novel.
I always forget, I'll hear movies, it's like, oh yeah, that is Stephen King, Yeah. You forget about that. And also, our previous caller mentioned Silence of the Lambs also. I didn't read the book.
I did, actually. Great, that's a case where I was actually led to the book by mm-hmm. the movie, and I do think that's an excellent adaptation. I also liked the Michael Mann Manhunter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was, which is an adaptation of Red Dragon. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll go back to the phones in just a minute. Paula emailed us. She says, my personal policy is that I either see a movie or read a book. Seldom do I do both, as I'm usually disappointed by the movie adaptation of a book that I really enjoy. So that is the way she goes about things. Let's go back to the phones and welcome Lori to the conversation. Hello.
Hi. I agree with your panel. I think Brokeback Mountain was perfect adaptation of the New Yorker story, which was only about 10 or 11 pages long. I think the worst that I've ever seen, and I love the writer, is Carl Hyacinth's Striptease. That was a real dud. And just as another comment, my mother kept diaries, and when she commented on To Kill a Mockingbird when she first saw it, she thought it was terrible.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did she say why? Did you ever know?
No, I'd have to go back and take a look at that. But and she was quite a scholar, so I maybe it was just too, we've had quite a bit of distance since that came out. Well, not that much, but anyway, she didn't like it.
All right.
So there you go.
Lori, thanks very much for chiming in. And Joe in Crestwood, you're next. Hello.
Hi. I have a question, well, a comment. The Talented Mr. Ripley, mm-hmm. I love the book, and it was chilling and freaky, but the movie just didn't really, Matt Damon, I guess, didn't do that character justice, but the only great part of that movie was the Philip Seymour Hoffman character. I think he hit it dead on. I just like to have a comment on that.
Okay. Talented Mr. Ripley.
I didn't really like that movie.
I actually like that movie more than most people do, and it may be partly because I haven't read the book, but I find that all the performances hold up. But I couldn't agree with the caller more about Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think that is one of the great small performances I've ever seen.
He's nominated in Charlie Wilson's War.
In which he's very good again. He's never bad.
Now this is a movie. Let's divert quickly, since he mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman, a nonfiction work. You've seen it, Tom?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Have you read the book or?
No, I haven't. Uh-huh.
Is nonfiction easier, do we think, to translate somehow or?
Well, Aaron Sorkin did the screenplay, and he said it made it easier for him because he was able to talk to Charlie and. He also talked to George Krill, who did the story, and he said it was easier for him to just concentrate on the main character in that mm-hmm. respect instead of trying to get all the secondary things that were in the nonfiction mm-hmm. story.
You think there's less maybe that reader investment, emotional investment in a nonfiction work as opposed
to a novel? You could be
something.
Right there.
Okay. A case where that isn't true, but it ended up making a great movie that's very different is the... is Adaptation, which Charlie Kaufman's adaptation of The Orchid Thief, which is really a movie about how impossible it was to make an adaptation of that movie. But it's a brilliant, hilarious movie about not only adapting a novel, but also adapting to the Hollywood system.
And writer's block.
That should have been required viewing before we did this show. Kevin Sullivan, any comment
to make
on nonfiction?
I'm trying to think of bad nonfiction translations, and I'm not really coming up with anything because I keep thinking of Goodfellas and The Right Stuff, which are nonfiction works that are just great movies, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Joe, thanks very much. We had an email from Daniel. He says, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil was a great, underrated book-to-movie adaptation. He thought Kevin Spacey and John Cusack were excellent in that. I did not read the book. I did see the movie. I enjoyed the film.
I saw the movie as well. I didn't read the book. But the movie wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that? No?
I just thought it was kind of slow. It didn't really come alive for me. The performances just kind of laid there to me in that movie.
Had you read the book?
I hadn't, no.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Rob, you're next. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to tie in some of the more recent books, such as Jurassic Park and... Silence of the Lambs. It seems like good adaptations of those books have given the authors permission to write really bad follow-ups. And that those follow-ups are, when you read them, they really sound like they're designed to be made into bad adaptations. And I was wondering if your literati had any comments on that.
The best comment on that kind of thing is from, is from Deep Throat, from the Watergate scandal, which mm-hmm. is Follow the Money. Once these things hit, as Jurassic Park or Silence of the Lambs did, there is so much money to be made from that franchise mm-hmm. and tremendous pressure to get another one out, and it may or may not be successful.
So a filmmaker might pursue making a film just because he thinks the market is there, she thinks the market is there, sort of a built-in audience when...
Well, it's called show business, not show art.
Yes. You know,
and that's it is. I mean, Hollywood is it's to make money. They want people to sit in the theater and buy popcorn. And if it's a good movie, that's gravy on it. But they really just want to sell the tickets. I mean, it's a business, and that's what Hollywood does is they promote and sell movies more than make them.
What about something like? And I read the book but didn't see the film, The Da Vinci Code, which is a hugely popular book, enormously popular, but the movie got such lukewarm. You know, and it seems like it would have been, hey, this would make a great movie.
You would think, because everything that is good about that movie has to do with plot. It is one of the worst, that is good about the book has to do with plot. It is one of the worst written books in terms
of
prose style.
But you can see it as a movie.
But
know,
yes, it's very easy to visualize, and I'm surprised, frankly, that the movie didn't do better.
Yeah. Before we go back to calls, you guys be the producer. What books would make great movies? What have you read whenever that you think, you know, they've never made a movie of this, or they've made a movie, we wanted to give The Great Gatsby another chance. And so, you know, either what do you think would make a great movie, or what do you want us to give in a second chance?
There's a series of they're sci-fi novels by the late Roger Zelazny, the Amber series, that I always wanted to see made into films. But they would have to be, you know, sort of like the Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. There's like five books, so it'd take quite a bit to do them.
Mm-hmm.
My first choice is sci-fi, too, although I'm afraid nobody will be able to make a good enough movie of it. But that's William Gibson's Neuromancer, which I'm told has been tied up in legal difficulties for years and years. It has a fascinating visual world, and it in the right hands, I think it could be a great movie, as Blade Runner was, by the way. That's a great adaptation that we haven't mentioned.
Kevin.
There's a series of novels by a guy named Charlie Houston right now that I think would make great movies, and those are the only things that are coming to my mind right now.
Is it the
Caught
Joe
Stealing?
Oh, I thought you said Joe Pitt.
Yeah. No, those are great too.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones, take another couple quick calls. We have just a couple of minutes before we have to end the program. Josh in Shelbyville, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. You've been talking about books being made to movies, but also I was curious about the movies that are turned into books, books that actually give a insight more into a character's mind and development that we don't necessarily see in the movie.
I don't. Do you have an example?
One example, Star Wars, for instance. You know,
that's what I was gonna say.
You can see a lot of in the movie the character and the character development, but there's a lot of things you don't really notice until you actually read the book, and you can actually see the struggle within each individual character.
Oh, that's a great point. And John, you wanted to.
I remember reading Star Wars after I'd seen the movie, and you do gain a lot of insights into, especially Darth Vader, his point of view, how he thought the Emperor was a fool when he was going to overthrow him, and you really didn't get that from seeing the movie, but you did get that from the novel, which was by Lucas as well.
Okay, and next up we go to Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was calling about the Godfather movies, and just kind of to let people know who are fans of the Godfather like me, I watch it every time it's on Bravo, mm-hmm. which is several times a month. But there were two books that were written just in the last couple of years by a writer named Mark Weingartner, and he actually won some type of a national contest for writers to take up the story that Mario Puzo had started. And the interesting thing is that the Godfather Part 3 was not based on any written novel or anything.
No. And we're running down on time here. Quickly, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. And these two Weingartner books just totally picked up the story kind of in between the three movies and really fleshed out the characters, especially Plato.
Okay. And what's the author's name real quick?
Oh, sorry?
What was the author's name again?
Mark Weingartner.
Okay. All right, Mike, thanks very much. For those of us who are vastly disappointed in Godfather 3, what were they thinking? That's got to be the most common.
Money.
You come
Money.
Out of the movie, what were they thinking? Anyway, I want to thank our callers for chiming in this hour and our guests for talking about books to movies. We've welcomed Tom Byers, professor of English at the University of Louisville, John Reisner, who teaches screenwriting at the U of L Delphi Center, Kevin Sullivan, a bookseller with Borders Books and Music. Thanks so much for your time and your selections. It's been a fun hour.
Well, thank you,
thank
Julie.
You.
Thanks for having me.
Let's do another hour.
For more information about today's program, go to WFPL.org and select State of Affairs from the program list. You can email us from there or continue the conversation on our weblog at soablog.org. Or you can reach us by phone at 502-814-6500. State of Affairs is produced by the Public Radio Partnership with support from the University of Louisville. Robin Fisher is our producer. Our assistant is Laura Ellis. Reed Thompson is our intern. I'm Julie Credens. I hope you'll join us next time for another edition of State of Affairs.
The views presented on State of Affairs do not necessarily reflect those of the University of Louisville, Public Radio Partnership, or its underwriters.